welcome to the Power Press Podcast. My name is Mackenzie Bennett, and I'm your host. On this podcast, we share information to empower your podcast. Thanks for listening. We are about 2 weeks into January so far, so we've got the first new episode of the year for 2018. So on this episode, I'm going to have Clay Connery with me. He is the host, and basically, it seems like the only guy behind his show, Working Cows. He is in South Dakota. He's been working in this industry for a while and finally decided to delve into a different part of an industry he's already familiar with in a different direction with a podcast to share his information. So he's going to tell you about his show. We're going to talk about some podcasting predictions for 2018. Really great episode. Thanks for listening. So enjoy. Thanks for joining me. My guest is Clay Connery. Welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for being on today. So you reached out to me about a month ago about being on the show. I can't remember if you heard a call out or whatever it was, but you're finally on.
Yeah, no, I think I saw it on Twitter, actually, and just figured it was a good opportunity to get some more experience. That's kind of what I'm after at this point in my podcasting career.
Definitely always a good way to go is get yourself on as many shows as possible. Practice makes perfect in this industry. That's yep. For sure. Thanks for joining. We're going to be talking about your show, Working Cows, later on in the episode. To get started, we're going to dive right into an article from earlier this week called 20 Plus Blogging, Video, and Podcasting Predictions for 2018 from the Pros. So this is coming from the Social Media Examiner. They put on Social Media Marketing World at the end of February. It's in a huge conference at this point. There's a bunch of people in the podcasting industry that are attending. So I figured this would be a good resource. There's over 20 different predictions that they have, about five of them that just focus on podcasting. But there's a ton of great insight in this article in general. So
yeah, it was an interesting article. Definitely good to hear what some people who kind of spend all their time thinking about these things are thinking.
That's the thing that comes from people like this is that, you know, when they're fully immersed in the podcasting industry, not only just because they have a podcast, but because they either are consultants or they do a podcast about podcasting or just because they've been doing it for so long, is that they're able to, you know, give this to people, give this outlook to people. So
yeah, and they've got some credibility. You know, I mean, a couple of guys on that list have been people that I've drawn from resources that they have created as far as preparing to launch my own podcast. So
exactly. So it starts out with number one is from Gary Leland, who I am very familiar with. He has been on the Blueberry team for a very long time, and every time I get to see him at an event, it's great. So I have been keeping up with his new show called the Crypto Cousins Podcast. I don't listen to it because I don't care about Bitcoin and that's what it's about, but I know that he's doing it.
Right.
But he said that creators will monetize with cryptocurrencies, similar to if people are charging online to, you know, if they want to charge 50 cents to read an article, then the person that would be charging is going to be paying an outrageous amount in credit card fees or whatever the, you know, payment process fees are, and instead they're going to be moving to cryptocurrencies. That is what he is guessing. I don't know enough, but you know, I'm going to tend to believe Gary because he's definitely all in on this Bitcoin thing.
Right. No, I think that Bitcoin got a lot of positive press at the end of last year and into a little bit of this year with its kind of surge upwards. I think it topped out somewhere over $20,000 per Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so they were, you know, I think that a lot of people became aware of it. Now, whether or not it becomes a medium of exchange or just something that people buy like gold for value, that is yet to be seen. But the low costs of how does he put it? The low cost of the transaction fee is something that's going to be attractive to a lot of people because, and I think it's a newer model. You know, it's kind of like podcasting is to radio. I think Bitcoin is to money a little bit. where the credit card fees don't make sense unless you're over a certain amount, really. Mm-hmm. And these some Bitcoins, and there's so much in there. I've spent a little time just kind of dabbling, but some of the Bitcoin wallets do charge less for transactions, or some of the Bitcoin platforms do charge less for transactions. So there is that opportunity out there. Getting people to buy in and have Bitcoin to send you and different things like that are probably going to be challenging, but it's definitely the platform is there, the structure, the system is there. Getting people to buy in will be the challenge, but I think it's potential for sure.
Yeah, and it didn't say anything specific about podcasting for this one, but since Gary is so up to date with the podcasting community as well, I figured I would keep it in, because I could also see this translating not only from articles that people need to pay to see, but also for podcast content. So,
sure, you know, and even access to private Facebook groups or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I think that seems to be one of the easiest ways to monetize your podcast.
Is to create your own group that way.
Right. Now, getting interesting people in there so that you have engaging discussions and people stick around and continue to, you know, to pay for membership.
That's a different challenge. Yes.
Yeah. But I think that, it doesn't require you to sit down and make 48 videos on how to do whatever. It's just something you can put out there.
Right.
And really, it'll curate itself, and you can just be in there to admin a little bit. So, mm-hmm.
Okay, number six is, this is from Pat Flynn, who is also a huge podcast influencer. He says video creators will move beyond YouTube. YouTube did not have a good end of 2017 or beginning of 2018, whatever it was, with Logan Paul. Regardless, video is, there's a lot of predictions about video in this entire article, saying that people are going to be moving to it because it's becoming more popular, and saying that, you know, they're gonna see more content for this, and they're gonna see it in other places besides YouTube, specifically possibly Vine 2.0, which I personally did not know was going to be happening.
No, I hadn't heard of it either until I read this article, and it's interesting. I know that vines are very entertaining. I tried to do a little bit of research on what that was actually going to look like, and all I got was a bunch of memes and savagery in response to yes. the initial announcement, but that's the internet for you.
That is accurate. So, also anticipated that there's going to be some updates for podcasters, with basically an update for how the analytics look, because Apple just released their stats. It's still technically in beta, as far as I know. There have been quite a few things mentioned on social media this week about people not being able to see their own shows in Podcast Connect. So it looks like they're doing some work on it. But it is once they get it all settled, it will be a viable place to look at, to analyze your stats and put some thought into, you know, these are the stats that Apple is providing. How can I change this for my show? What is good? What is bad? So he's right. It's going to have, you know, some people are going to care.
For sure. No, I think that the Apple stats thing is kind of typical Apple. Roll it out and, you know, maybe even save some things for next year's rollout, but always have something to announce at Worldwide Developer Conference, yes. or, you know, the launch of the new iPhone or whatever it is. You know, it seems like they've always got, you know, something else to throw out there, and they wait for those kind of big moments when a lot of ears are tuning in, and they roll them out in those points. So I would, you know, by no means expect the current version of Podcast Connect to be the final one. And I think it's going to continue to grow and become something really useful. And I know it's useful for me as far as the conversations I'm getting ready to have with advertisers, for sure.
Definitely. I think you're absolutely right. Apple always waits. They're not going to just let this fall to the side, because they just, you know, they made it known. So it'll be up
to I think they're a little bit different than Google in that regard, where Google's willing to kill a project, and Apple seems to wait until they've got it kind of honed a little bit and then roll it out progressive fashion over the coming years. Is that accurate as your understanding?
Yeah, it kind of seems that way. Or they will, you know, Google will just not address what is happening, I feel like, and then just kill it. And Apple, I feel like, will make it known that they're killing it if they do, as opposed to Google, who is just like, did you not know that that was happening? That kind of seems to be my experience. Yeah. So,
yep. As far as the video creators moving beyond YouTube, there again, the buy-in's going to be the hard part, you know, getting those people switched over to a new platform. Google Plus did not replace Facebook.
Absolutely, you
know,
not.
Facebook did replace MySpace, but, you know, I don't know. I think that's the exception rather than the rule. We've seen many social media startups come and go in the face of the giants and getting that buy-in. Now, having a big content creator like Logan Paul or somebody else leaving or you know, dissatisfied is going to probably help some new video startup, but it's an interesting perspective for sure.
I mean, I haven't really thought about video in a very long time. I've never been like a YouTube person per se, but I do know that the younger generations tend to be the ones spending significant time on YouTube, and that since they have had technology in their hand literally their entire lives, they are more likely to quickly move to a different platform as opposed to other generations and other first-time early adapters, is that they are even quicker to move on to something. They're quick to leave something, they're quick to move to something. So I see issues with them, you know, potentially going to a different platform, but also less than people might expect because of that.
Sure. Yeah, and I've seen people predict, you know, things like this in the past. People that I trusted and their social media savvy trusted their perspective, and it's just been interesting to see the number of younger kids, because that's my other job. I work with kids, and the number of younger kids that I still see opening up Facebook, mm-hmm. at least some of the time. Obviously, I think Snapchat is probably their go-to.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that has as much to do with the fact that their parents aren't on there as anything, but I'm not sure.
It definitely helps. It definitely does. So, okay, moving on to number 7. Small batch podcast production surges. And this is from Rich Brooks. He works in new media and web design and whatnot, but he is speaking on how many companies and organizations such as NPR, ESPN are creating small batches of content to release, similar to what happened a couple years ago with Serial, because people are able to, it's sometimes easier for the audience, they appreciate it more sometimes depending on who they are, it's easier for the crew, the people involved in that sense. So definitely seeing a surge of this. It wasn't the first time that it happened with Serial, but it was the first time that it got popular in that sense.
Yeah, and we've seen others come since, you know, Dirty John and some of the other ones. I would say even Up and Vanished to some degree was similar in yeah. that regard as far as the way it rolled out, although I think there's still new content being created in regards to that case, mm-hmm. or at least that podcast feed is still putting out maybe different things. I haven't finished it. I haven't been on a road trip lately. So that tends to be when I listen to those kind of things, is when I'm going to be in the car for a few hours at a stretch, and I can hammer through a few episodes at a time, you know, without interruption.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting that the podcast in the different ways that they're put out are consumed, you know, like I consume podcasts every day. I can't tell you the last time I listened to the radio.
Yeah.
But there are different podcasts I will just put in my feed, and I'm going to get to that when I'm on a road trip, or I'm going to get to that when I, you know I've got a couple hours of mindless work ahead of me,
definitely.
You know, whatever it might be. So, but then there's those that I listen to every day, and they are kind of my radio as I'm driving around town and in and out of the car and different things like that. So
I do the same thing. I have, you know, I download different episodes from different shows, and then pick and choose, because there are different times when it's appropriate, I guess, in my head to listen to them. So personally, I am a big fan of small batches because I think I get a little burnout sometimes with the shows that have episodes so often and for years on end. Because in some sense, it's like a TV show where you watch it for 8 seasons or whatever, and you're like, okay, well, it stopped being good after season 5. So, like, I'm going to still watch it, but is it as good as it was before? And I feel like this kind of sometimes can take care of that. Is that when you focus on something so narrow like this, is that you really can get the quality in and then release it, as opposed to sometimes one by one where you're like, that one wasn't as strong. This season, like this batch right here wasn't as good. This was going on in my life at this point, blah, 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 blah. So it just depends on the type of content that you're putting out sometimes, if it makes sense to do a season like that. But I understand like why it's so popular.
Totally. And actually, number 17 on this, if I can insert another one,
yeah,
talks about that. It's talking about blogs, but it says recognizing this shift, and that is the content shock shift, which is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So many episodes for so many years, like there's this backlog of episodes I'm never going to get through.
Exactly.
You know, there's 1,000 episodes there that I'm never going to be able to listen to all those, you know, and without some massive amounts of discipline, which tends not to be the strength of the podcast listening generation. But anyways, content shock, you know, is a thing. And it says recognizing this shock, this shift, two top marketing blogs convinced the Convert and Content Marketing Institute announced reduced blog publication schedules for 2018.
Right.
As a producer of a weekly show, that was encouraging.
Yes. Yeah, I totally understand. I mean, I do this every 2 weeks because I can't imagine putting in the time for every week. It's a lot. So
yeah, and I've got some things that have helped me a lot in that we'll probably talk about a little bit later. So yeah,
definitely. Okay, what was number 10? Let me find it. Guest partner with podcasters for SEO. This is by John Jantz. He was focusing on how whenever there are guests on a different podcast, such as you being on this one with me, I'm going to link to your site. I'm going to link to, you know, your social media, all these different things, whatever you have out there on the internet that you want me to link to, I will. And that's kind of a podcaster thing, at least in terms of like on a website, whenever you put out your episode with show notes and whatnot. And we do it because, yes, we want to share with everyone else, but also because it's great for SEO in general. And I think other people are going to be realizing that now.
Yeah, people are Googling PowerPress a lot more than they're Googling Clay Connery at this point, I'm pretty sure. So, I think that's just an example of how that can be helpful to somebody to get a mention in a show notes page for the PowerPress podcast or whatever podcast it is. And that's basically what I've been doing with my podcast, is bringing on experts in the field along with producers, and we'll talk about that later. But because I think that, you know, their name in the title, their book linked in the show notes page, their article linked in the show notes page is going to do more for me than quite a bit of money that I could spend as far as SEO is concerned.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, SEO will take you a long way, but if you have that person on your show, then you better be doing your SEO correctly, or else you could seriously be missing out. So it's important to keep up on that. All right. The last one is from John Lee Dumas. He's very popular for Entrepreneurs on Fire, and his topic was podcasting moves into prominence. Basically, he just has a very good outlook in 2018 and thinks it's going to be a positive year for podcasting. 2017, as someone who has been working for Blueberry for 3 years now, I definitely saw 2017 being the busiest, and seeing a different type of podcaster coming into the space, and someone that is not tech savvy, someone that has not necessarily been listening to podcasts for 6 years and finally decided to start their own. It's new people doing this for different reasons, because they finally feel that they have the ability to, that their boss wants them to, or that they see how popular it is and, you know, they're realizing how fun it is. So that's basically what he's talking about. It's if you have good content and, you know, you're bringing something valuable to listeners, that the podcasting community is not going to be too crowded, because if you have the good content, people will find you.
Yeah. And there's so much there. The barrier to entry, I think, is the biggest thing. Like you're saying, the not tech savvy folks mm-hmm. are coming online. You know, I mean, you look at the ATR 2100, right? Yep. Probably the most popular podcasting mic, or at least the one I hear mentioned the most when Definitely. It comes to people podcasting. You know, I mean, you plug that USB cord into your computer, download Audacity, boom, you're a podcaster. You know, I mean, there's obviously some more to it than that with getting it online and getting it into different stores and different things like that. But those two things, you know, even 5 years ago would have been a huge barrier to entry. And now it's pretty simple.
Yeah, they're not an issue like they used to be in the past. So these are good things.
And as somebody who is has a very niche podcast, I think that what he's saying is very true, that the podcasting is never too crowded. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably something more niche than my podcast, but mine is probably up there.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, that was what kept me from starting a podcast, was I don't know what my niche would be.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about that story a little bit later.
Actually, this is a perfect segue, because that was the last you know, number in this article that I wanted to talk about. So let's start talking about your show. It's called Working Cows. It's obviously very niche. You can tell that from the title. So give us some info about it.
Sure. So I've been a podcast consumer for a number of years, listening to different podcasts and different formats, from the 3-hour rambling conversation to the, you know, 30-minute everyday, you know, specific topics and everything like that. And every podcaster, for whatever reason, continually says, you should start a podcast. It seems like they're always saying, you know, my audience, you should start a podcast. Some of them say it explicitly. Some of them say it by providing hosting deals to people who are starting websites, and then giving shout outs. That's how I got into it. Mm-hmm. Giving shout outs on their podcast to people who start websites, even if it's a podcaster, which is an interesting thing about the podcast community, is there doesn't seem to be that. There's just so many pieces of the pie, and I'm going to keep this to myself. There's, you know, it's always get more people in. And I think it's all in large part due to the fact that people are curating content like never before. Mm-hmm. And the barrier to entry is lower, and people are willing to, or are looking for, that really niche specific content. And so anyways, that I got into it just never knowing what I was going to talk about. I never knew, like, okay, what would my podcast be about if I started one? Because the tech side of it wasn't a barrier. I've worked as a youth and associate pastor for 10 years in a church, and have, you know, dealt with recording equipment, dealt with sound equipment, dealt with microphones, all those kinds of things. I have learned some lessons as I've become a podcaster.
We all have.
That recording setup is a lot more sensitive than the PA setup that you would use on a Sunday morning or just in a large group gathering. So anyways, so I just never knew what my podcast would be about. And then my wife and I, as we have started to transition to being more involved on my family's ranch. I grew up in Western South Dakota mm-hmm. on a cow-calf beef cattle ranch. And as we began to transition to being more involved there, as my parents have gotten older and are looking to slow down in the next 5 or so years, we attended a class, and one of the teachers of this class, and it was actually 2 days over 2 days a month for 4 months. So one of the teachers of this class continually said, somebody in this class needs to start a podcast. And I think he'd probably been saying it for years, because they do this class every year. But he's a podcast listener himself, but there was nobody in the niche doing the podcast,
right?
Doing a podcast. And so I was like, well, I could do that. You know, this is a topic that I've been immersed in my entire life. And there's all of that knowledge and all those resources and all those ways of doing things to draw from. And then now, in through this class, I'm being exposed to a whole new set of ways to do things. I could do this. I could jump in and start this podcast. And so after him saying that every class period for about three class periods, I finally said, I'm going to do that. And then the final class period, I announced it to the class of 30 or so people who would be interested in hearing it. And I started in November of 2017.
Wow. So you're pretty fresh. You're, you know, 11, 12 episodes in, right?
Yeah. Episode 12 will release on Monday. So
good.
Yep.
So what exactly is your show about?
The tagline is providing a platform for producers to share paradigm challenging practices. And if I was a podcaster before I made that, I would not have put so many P's in it. But, you know, that's something you learn.
You'll adjust to it. I'm sure you have.
Right. Well, it's just a pop filter. That's all it really takes. But, yeah. That was one of those things I learned. That's a different animal when you're talking right into that microphone than it is on a PA system set up, a large gathering set up. And so I recorded my first episode with this lady who was coming into town to do a talk regarding Farming Without the Bank was the name of her book, and she was talking about that. And so I just sat down and put a microphone in front of her face. I put a microphone in front of my face, and we recorded an episode, and I started to listen to it. I'm like, oh man, this is unlistenable. And how do I fix that? And how do I get the levels up high enough so that people can hear? And so one of the podcasts I listen to continually promotes their producer, a guy named Chris Williams out of Austin, Texas. And so I just got in touch with him, and it cost me a little extra money to get that first episode done right. And then he said, the only thing you really need to do is get a pop filter.
Yeah.
And so I got myself, you know, a cheap pop filter, and it's probably been the best money I've spent in podcasting so far.
You sound great, and I've listened to your episodes, and you sound great on there. So I understand the trials at the beginning. I think we all do that a little bit when we first get started, and then you go from there, because that's what else are you gonna do?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I appreciate that, and honestly, a lot of it has to do with the fact that my partnership with Chris Williams, who is doing my stuff for me, you know, and his ad is in my show, you know, just that he's the one making it sound as good as it does. But, you know, I've tried to do everything I can on my end.
The thing that I noticed is that you, like, I was taking a look at your website, and I see that you have a ton of affiliates already. So how did you get started with those?
So I talked to a local radio guy, and I just kind of, and actually I'm having lunch with him later today to talk about some more ways we can get the Working Cows podcast out there. He's actually the guy that did my show intro.
Oh, nice.
He's been a radio big voice legend in our area for a long time, and is a regular attender of our church. And so I just kind of hit him up one day and said, would you be interested in doing that? He's like, yeah, give me a script. I'll do it for nothing. And, you know, anyways, but he said, you know, having ads will give credibility. And I don't know if that's an old paradigm from radio, or if it's holds true.
I'd say it does
in podcasting,
in somewhat.
Right. I agree. I think the content is the big thing, and honestly, I think that in today's generation, sometimes ads can get in the way of the content and can be a detriment to retaining listenership, which is always something that you've got to keep an eye on, you know, and something that I'm still wrestling with, but I just reached out to a local vendor who was in the niche, who I knew personally, and I said, you know, would you be willing to allow me to use your name in my podcast as an advertiser until I gather listeners, and we'll see what this relationship might look like from going forward. So that's how I did it.
That's a good way to start.
Yeah. So I didn't know if that was an old paradigm or if that's something that holds true in podcasting, but it was something I thought would help, especially with their name in my area. Mm-hmm. And right now South Dakota, where I'm at, Western South Dakota, is still the number one listened state. Although Texas beef country is not far behind, which is kind of fun because I don't know anybody in Texas.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, what I'm doing with the show is we're talking about paradigm challenging practices. And so we're talking about some kind of really taking some deep dives into how do you use your cows to improve soil and water and even air quality and those things. And so it's a pretty tight niche, and it's a pretty small thing, but there's a lot of people that are waking up to this way of thinking. And even some environmental groups like the World Wildlife mm-hmm. Fund. I just went to a class there the other day. They paid to bring in a speaker, and they are really trying to preserve the Northern Great Plains, which is one of the last three functioning grasslands in the world.
Yeah.
And those grasslands are doing a lot to sequester carbon and purify air and water resources, you know, and so it's just something that I didn't even know before I started my podcast, but has been an opportunity for me to call these people in and talk about these things. And so it's a broad appeal, a broad audience, and that's been really fun to see people, you know, states I don't know anybody in are tuning in and listening regularly. So that's been a cool thing.
Definitely. That's actually something that I was going to bring up, is that, you know, when you were talking about the people that came in for that class, like, I personally, yeah, I have never cared about cows in that sense, but I do care about how this industry affects the environment and what we can do for preserving things. And it seems niche, and it definitely is, but it's not as niche as, you know, the audience, like, it might seem in terms of who's going to listen to it. So I think it'll work out well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of that is packaging and the people that you mm-hmm. choose to bring on and talk to. And you know, I have some people that I really want to sit down and have conversations with, guys like Joel Salatin and Alan Savory and some of those guys who are talking about how really great Alan Savory. I was just listening to a talk with him yesterday. He said that he got in trouble for his TED talk, that he said that grazing animals were the only hope for stemming climate change. So he said, after I got in trouble by all the academics for saying that grazing animals were the only hope, I went back and redid my presentation. I put "only" in capital letters and bold print. And, you know, so I'd love to sit down and talk to that guy. I'd love to sit down and talk to, there's a sustainable ranching initiative, which is actually based out of Colorado Springs or Fort Collins, Colorado, mm-hmm. I think. And it's a division of the World Wildlife Fund. And I was talking with some people the other day, and I said, you know, I saw World Wildlife Fund, I think it was the World Wildlife Fund at the end of Free Willy. And that, you know, that didn't translate to ranching to me for nope. whatever reason, you know.
No, it did not.
but they are investing a lot of money in ranchers because they see the value that ranchers bring to the soil.
Absolutely.
If they manage their animals correctly, they can actually increase the production of the soil. And when the soil production is increased, it has to have carbon. And so it sucks that carbon out of the air and becomes a big sponge and uses that for to create more plants and nutrients for the cows to eat. So it's just been, as you can tell, I'm excited about it. I'm passionate about it. And it's just a whole lot of fun to put this information out there and find new guests, new people. That's the challenging thing for me. The most challenging thing for me in podcasting is mm-hmm. I don't want to just talk to experts. I want to talk to producers, people who are actually doing this stuff.
Right.
You know, I want to talk to, cause my dad's 65 years old, or he will be 65 in 2018. Mm-hmm. And, you know, an expert from Fort Collins doesn't have a whole lot of clout with him, but a producer from Nebraska, like the one I'm going to interview later today, who's been doing this stuff for a few years and has been seeing increases in the productivity of his land and the health of his cattle, that guy has more clout with my dad than an expert from Fort Collins who has a Washington, D.C. telephone number. No offense to that particular person.
Yes.
But so it's just one of those things that I want to find those producers who are doing these things and put them out there.
Can you give me a little bit of insight into what your podcasting experience has been so far? Something that was challenging, or, you know, how you decided on Blueberry or PowerPress or anything like that?
I think honestly, PowerPress put me over the top when it came to Blueberry. I didn't understand how WordPress plugins worked.
Yep.
So I didn't know that you could use PowerPress with other stuff. But to me, it was neck and neck as far as I could tell, just analyzing the different things that I was able to analyze. And PowerPress being a Blueberry product, I figure it's going to work with Blueberry's hosting better than it does with others. So I figured I would go that direction with PowerPress and Blueberry. And the players that PowerPress provides are intuitive and they scale well on different platforms. And all those different things are just, I'm pretty excited about being on Blueberry and using them for my hosting. So
oh, good.
It's been a great experience thus far. Pretty intuitive.
I think we're starting to hear that more and more, but also not at the same time because we're constantly adjusting our services to make it more intuitive. But then we also get more and more people that are wanting to podcast that are the lowest on the totem pole in terms of what they know for technology. So there's right. a little give and take there.
You know, I mean, if you can attach an email, you know, if you can attach a file to an email, you can upload a podcast to a website, in my experience, you know, and that's kind of how I've always described it to
the
grandparent generation, you know, who are emailing pictures to kids or whatever, if they are doing that. I'm like, if you can email your Christmas card to your kids, you can, you know, upload files to a website.
That's a nice outlook for a lot of people, I think, actually.
when you feel
like it's too complicated, just remember that.
Right. When I was looking into websites for our church, I was like, well, if I get hit by a bus, I want them to be able to
yes.
continue to use this thing.
Yes.
And so I found a website that was as easy to upload a sermon to the website as it is to attach a picture to an email. That was kind of my criteria.
It works and it works well.
Yep,
so
it does. So no, I appreciate Blueberry and PowerPress. It's been a good relationship thus far.
Glad to hear it.
I wish your statistics weren't so addicting. that's just my own ego, though.
That I think is very definitely a new podcaster thing. Is because
right.
they see those
yeah.
numbers and they get attached to them very quickly. And then you know, as you get further along, you'll start to step away from them a little more often.
Right. So. It'll become a daily check instead of an hourly check.
Exactly.
And then it'll become a weekly check.
Exactly. At some point, you will get the daily email updates and that will just be acceptable. And
right.
then every once in a while, you'll log in to look at the more detailed and, you know, go through all the whole thing. So
as your listeners might have gathered, I'm a giant nerd. So I love the drill down. I love to, you know, I mean, I've got people listening fairly regularly. I think most episodes get a download from Argentina, which is a huge ranching
cool.
country. So that is, I love that. You know, I just love to go through and look at those things. It's really cool.
Good. Okay. So thank you for sharing about your show. Please tell our listeners where they can find you in terms of social media, your website, anything like that.
Sure. WorkingCows.net. is the website, mm-hmm. workingcows.net, and then the shows are just / whatever the show number is, and we're up to 11 now. 12 will release on Monday, as I said. My social media accounts, facebook.com/workingcows is the page, and there's some pictures there. Another thing that people might find interesting is I like to promote my wife. She's doing a blog, a weekly blog on the workingcows.net website of kind of a fresh look at ranching.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't grow up like day to day involved on a ranch. And so she's kind of blogging about the day to day goings on a weekly basis. She's sharing kind of what happened this week around the ranch. And I think some people who aren't familiar with what goes on around a ranch might be interested in that. And coming up in March and April, there'll be lots of baby calf pictures, I'm assuming. So lots of cuteness will ensue.
Yes.
I just got a call from her. We've got kind of a little farmstead that we live on right now. And we just had a set of twin baby goats born at our house today.
They're
so
cute.
Yeah. Yeah. So sorry, I'm supposed to be promoting myself.
No, I just want to see the baby goats. They're so
I could probably
adorable.
Get you a picture.
I'm gonna look out for these pictures on your site.
All right. So right. workingcows.net is the site. Facebook.com/workingcows is the page, and there's, you know, regular updates there, not just this is the new episode, this is the
yeah.
new blog. And then I did not start a Twitter handle for the show because I knew I would not be able to do both the Facebook page and the Twitter well.
Smart.
And I sound like I'm 60, the Twitter. So Anyways, I had a Twitter handle that I already had built up and have had since shortly after Twitter started. So I just have been using that and posting some of those content that gets posted to the Facebook page there as well. So that's YP Clay Connery, as in youth pastor Clay Connery. Okay. So.
All right. Awesome. Thanks so much for being on. You can find all of these links that he was just talking about and more in the show notes. But thanks for being on the show today, Clay.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.